This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello, everyone. My name is Andrew Laurie, and I'm a content manager here at Elgin. I'm here with Bill Page, who's our head of real estate research, who's just published a paper on UK real estate and how it's performed after the recent bout of repricing. Bill, welcome to Elgin Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I'd just like to talk through your note, if we can. I mean, first of all, the logical place to begin is the kind of macroeconomic context for where we begin. So how would you tee up the context over the past kind of year or so?
Well, the economic context is difficult for many asset classes, real estate included. So Elgin do expect a recession in the UK. The UK won't be alone there. There's broad expectations of a recession more or less globally. That recession, although there's a high probability of it happening at some point in the next 12 months, the peak to trough change in GDP is expected to be reasonably mild compared to previous downturns. That said, it's a difficult situation for any assets that require growth. Equally, we still got this problem with rates, higher rates, with higher for longer being the mantra at the moment, rather than all the reports we've seen written over the last 6 months of how high will they go. It's more, the dialogue is more about how long they will stay at terminal rates. So that's difficult for real estate as an asset class, but we need to be humble in our ability to forecast rates. So I think more or less all commentators got it wrong on the way up over the last 18 months, and they may well get it wrong on the way down. That said, we need to navigate this scenario of uncertainty and rates remaining a little higher for longer. Something else we're looking at, and this is more specific for real estate, I think, it does relate to rates, is lending appetite, both from banks and non-bank lenders. So certainly for banks, the lending appetite to real estate is less aggressive than it has been, particularly for offices as well. And also with borrowing costs going up, many borrowers are feeling the pinch in terms of their repayment bills effectively increasing, and in some cases perhaps being more than their rental income. So we think that will increasingly shape markets going forward. And in a very kind of macro sense, we do see a link between the amount of bank lending to real estate in the economy and where the property yield sits. There's been a correlation over time, which if that continues, would suggest yields need to be a little bit higher. The final thing I'd say from the macro is inflation. It's not gone away as much as we would like it to have gone away. It remains higher than desired, although the pace of price rises have come down a little bit. That matters for many asset classes, but also matters for real estate. One thing we look at in our models is real terms rental value growth. With inflation at its current levels, it remains difficult at the aggregate level for all property. And again, all else equal, that would suggest yields need to be a little bit higher. But as I'm sure we'll get on to talk about, Andrew, there are different sectors doing some very different things at the moment. So it's important to look beyond the macro.
You mentioned rates, lending appetite and inflation. The other key part of the context, I think, is the return to the office and how we see that going. I think, can we zoom in on that a little bit? I mean, where are we now that we're a good year, 2 years post-pandemic? I mean, are we bidding into a new normal where the 2019 levels of attendance are just a memory, or how can we anticipate that developing?
Well, how long have we got? I mean, I can talk for ages about offices. It's a pet subject of mine. And I would say, and hopefully the audience would agree, that it's still a fascinating subject 3 years on after COVID. It can be quite emotive in many ways, this discussion. There are a lot of people in the industry with entrenched positions, whether it's on the side of flexible ways of working or perhaps an investment bank mandating 4 or 5 days a week back in the office. Where I think we can all agree is that there are certainly new structural and cyclical risks that offices as a sector have to navigate. Where I might add a bit of nuance to that is on the structural side, actually. Clearly, things have changed, but in my view, what COVID did is really magnify and accelerate many of the structural forces that are in place beforehand. So, you know, in the space of 3 years, we saw 10 to 15 years of accelerated trends that people had been talking about before. What does this mean for offices? Well, firstly, utilisation, still everyone's favourite subject. It is getting better. There are different data points that can tell you some different things, depending on what point you want to prove. But broadly, if you look at use of public transport, the amount of sandwiches being bought in Pret-a-Manger and that kind of stuff, it does point to improvements, but still way behind where we were in 2019. But I think that's broadly accepted. What does that mean for office real estate? Well, you know, the natural vacancy rate will end up being higher. Average rental growth may end up being lower as a result until the market can reposition its assets to better match new levels of demand. That all sounds quite negative, but as ever, there's a lot of nuance there. What we've seen over the last couple of years is continuing rental tension for the very best space. So, you know, very simply, for a certain amount of occupier demand in the market, almost all of that is focused on a diminishing amount of high quality office units, and rents are still going up for those units. Yields are also going up, which is creating an issue for capital values, but there is occupier demand there, and investors are increasingly realizing that portfolios need to be repositioned towards that good quality, well-located offices, or offices that can be converted into good quality and well-located offices. So there's a lot to play for. It's my view that the market is probably still a little too fixated on utilization rates and how far values might fall. But I do think, and we'll say a bit of this in a forthcoming paper, I think, I do think that those investors who start looking beyond where fair value is and what happens next will be well placed going forward.
In your note, you go into some detail about the UK's recent bout of repricing in real estate. Do you think we're at the end of that period? And if we're not, what kind of variables do you think will drive further change?
I don't think we're at the end, sadly. What I would say before I say anything else is that, again, different sectors are at different places in this journey, and there's no one size fits all. I would say that we are more than halfway through. The UK did start its repricing journey earlier than other geographies, mainly due to what happened with the trust budget and the fallout this time last year. But there are main risks. We talked about the macro risks earlier, but some of the more sector-specific risks that we are looking at, you know, apart from the economy and rates, are the implications of defined benefit pension fund maturity. So more funds are reaching a fully funded level. You know, we think that will result in real estate assets being released to the market that don't fit the profile of insurers going forward. On top of that, we've got continuing pressures on some property funds, which may lead to asset disposals. And I guess the aforementioned pressure on leveraged investors. So we don't think we're going to see a significant pressure on loan to values like we did in the GFC. But with financing rates going up, when some investors need to refinance, they're going to face a much bigger quarterly bill on their debt costs than they were paying before. And that isn't distress as such, but it is motivation to sell assets, especially where they're a little more risky or where the income is less certain. So we think those asset disposals will lead to another leg down in values. But if I can turn that negative point into a more positive point, the market does need a bit more price discovery. And we're still seeing this gap between buyers and sellers' expectation in a market with less debt. When those two parts of investment markets meet in the middle, we'll see more transactions and more people start looking forward. I think that might be sooner rather than later.
You mentioned that the fallout from the Truss government meant the UK began repricing a bit earlier than the rest of the developed world. Is the UK still an outlier? Can we place the UK in a bit more of an international context?
That did kick things off, so to speak, in the UK back in 2022. I should say that repricing was expected before that because values were looking a bit stretched relative to other asset classes, but that was really a catalyst for more accelerated movements. Other geographies around the world are seeing similar movements now. UK prices on MSCI, so our kind of valuation benchmark, on average are around 20%. Below peak levels now. The US is kind of catching up with that level, depending on the data set you use. Europe is further behind. There are, as ever, very different ways of looking at this, and those jurisdictions do indeed have different valuation methodologies. Some are faster to react to changes in prices, some are slower. That explains some of the difference, but with rates rising around the world, that is the common factor. The risk-free has gone up, financing costs have gone up, and prices, all else equal, will adjust.
Where do we see outperformers and underperformers looking forward?
Yeah, it's a really important question, Andrew. I mean, we've talked a bit about the property macro and the risks to broader pricing. But as I've said a couple of times, there's different sectors doing different things. And a lot of that depends on the supply and demand fundamentals in the market. Often it doesn't get more complicated than that. So where we are more comfortable at the moment is in those areas which are able to set pricing within reason. And that's particularly being seen in residential sectors. So things like built-to-rent residential, student accommodation, where there's a lack of supply and proven demand, and long-standing correlations between wage growth and rental growth, which we expect to continue. There are also some sectors that we'd regard as more niche, like data centres that are supported by many things, but more recently the boom in AI technology, requiring more data and different processing ability. Things like self-storage and affordable housing. But it's not just about the sectors themselves. Where we see relative value is in longer income properties. So when there's a decent lease length, links to inflation and protection from inflation. That is a sector that corrected quite hard in 2022 and yields look better value now. But perhaps more interestingly, and something that is accelerating, is operational real estate. And by that I mean sectors where there's no comfort from a traditional long lease. It's where the investor will work with the occupier to share upside from the revenues generated by the business within the building. So that can apply to self-storage, it can apply to retail, and it's increasingly applying to parts of the office market as well, where it can enable much needed flexibility. And I think in a world where lease lengths are falling, investors that are more comfortable with operational real estate are well placed. On the downside, you know, we're more cautious on offices. We talked about that earlier, with the caveat that's heavily polarised in terms of location and quality. Most of the downside is on average to poor assets. And even though yields for those asset types have moved out quite significantly over the last 6 months, we do think there's more to come there. Prime, very good assets should be relatively well insulated. And retail, we're below consensus on retail more broadly, seeing a recession as being bad for consumer spending. But again, within that, there are supermarkets which we think have repriced and offer an attractive yield now. And there's always opportunities within retail parks to reposition, especially where rents are at a fair value. So there's a lot to play for out there. Even considering the broader macro risks, we do think there are some significant pockets of outperformance.
Let's look forward. If I'm a developer, what kind of risks do I need to take into account if I'm going to start developing some new assets?
Well, it's tricky for developers. So again, we need to look back in history, in recent history, for a second here. Before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, construction material prices were increasing in line with broader economic inflation. The Ukraine situation accelerated that, and there was almost a once-in-a-lifetime inflation in construction prices, which, you know, again, all else equal, really challenged development viability. Prices still remain high. They have come off a bit in certain materials, but not necessarily in the materials that developers want to see them reduce. So things like concrete and steel are still very expensive. That is creating a challenge for viability alongside different rental growth and yield assumptions. So for individual schemes or plans, that's tricky and can be frustrating to make things happen. And we all know the country needs more, better buildings, whether that's commercial or residential. But for market function, it gets a little more interesting. So if development is curtailed, and we are seeing some dramatic slowdowns in construction activity, particularly in industrial, that creates a bit more pricing tension further out. So a lack of good quality stock, and as we were saying before, an occupier sector across all asset classes who want to take better quality stock, that provokes a bit of rental tension and could support market performance 2 or 3 years out. Equally, for those investors with equity who are able to fund schemes in the absence of banks who are still broadly pretty nervous about speculative developments, and not just in offices but elsewhere, there's an opportunity here for some decent returns and to enable much-needed construction to happen.
You can access Bill's note at LGIM.com/realassets/insights. Bill, thank you very much for your time.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only, and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.